It's a hard sell, selling the Ten Commandments. But here, I'm just going to point this out. Okay, this happened to me. I was minding my own business. No, I wasn't. I was seeking the Lord. And he spoke to my heart and he said, you know, the people of God do not know the beginning place of honoring me, how to honor me. And I'm, you know, thinking, you know, explain yourself more. And he led me to the Ten Commandments. And he showed me the Ten Commandments. And it, of course, it is the core of the Mosaic Law. Now, here's what we're up against, is that Jesus came and fulfilled the Mosaic Law. And he has given us a means whereby we may be saved apart from exerting effort to try to save ourselves. And I don't think that the Ten Commandments or the Mosaic Law was ever intended to be that, because if you read the Exodus 20, and there should be a sheet of paper near you we're going to look at, but if you read the beginning of that chapter, he says, I'm the God who delivered you from Egypt. That's salvation. This is after salvation. Now God begins to say, so here's the kind of relationship that I want to have with you, you know, okay? So I'm just going to throw something out there and you can tell me how you feel, or you can just take it in, you know. I don't think that having accepted Christ as our Savior and putting our faith and trust in him means that we now can resume, let's say, stealing from each other, or say, lying to each other, or killing each other, you know. I'm just thinking that somehow, some way, the Ten Commandments cross through into the new covenant. In fact, Jesus and the apostles would take all of the Ten Commandments and even take them deeper, you know, and more clarification. So I would like to point out to you that A, the Lord is highlighting this in my heart. B, I believe that it's the ABCs. It's like where you have to start. If you want to, let me just say it this way. If you have been rescued by the grace of God and you love Jesus and now you want to follow him, you know, if I'm sure that we want to figure out a way to honor the Father, our Father who art in heaven, hallowed be your name. How many of you know that Jesus, do you understand, Jesus actually did nothing apart from the will of the Father? Every step he took, everything he did, was to bring honor to the Father. So just before Jesus dies, Jesus says this in John's Gospel in chapter 13. He says, Jesus, knowing that the Father had put everything in his hands, you know, when Jesus said, all authority has been given to me in heaven and earth, everything had been put into Jesus' hands, then Jesus begins to wash the disciples' feet. And I think that that is like the epitome of grown-up love. You know, that Jesus was relating to his Father, and the way he was doing it was by serving people. And I think that's mature, grown-up love. So I believe that we all want to honor the Father, just as Jesus did. But I think that the thing that is difficult right now is that we're living in a time where, or we've lived through a time where the removal of the Ten Commandments and prayer from schools and things like that, you know, has become sort of a quasi-political thing. And I am not here advocating that we take the Ten Commandments and put them back in the schools, and prayer, put them back in the school. I'm not saying that I wouldn't rejoice if that happened. It would be great. But this is for believers. This is for us. This isn't really for everybody. It would work for everybody. It would be good for everybody. But this doesn't work unless you have a desire to love God and to honor him. All right? Are we clear on that? Okay, so let's just read these. Should be a sheet of paper nearby. And guys, I don't know why. Maybe you could put the fans on or something. I'm having hot flashes or something here. Maybe I shouldn't have worn a sweater. Jesus was asked, and this is the quote. We'll get back to that in a minute. The quote when Jesus was asked, which is the greatest commandment? And interestingly, Jesus doesn't pull out one of the Ten Commandments. He pulls out a different commandment, you know. But in Exodus 20, so down right underneath, and ESV means the English Standard Version of the Bible. I just used that this time just to spice it up a little. Okay. Exodus 20, verse number 1, just follow along with me. And God spoke all these words. He spoke all these words. The Jewish scholars call the Ten Commandments the Ten Words. So there were 613 other commandments that went along with the Ten Commandments. See, that's why we turn those fans off. It's because it makes a lot of noise. I think we're going to endure it. Okay. God spoke all these words. All these words. There was more things that he had to say to Moses and to the people of God. But he's going to start with 10. Verse number 2. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt and out of the house of slavery. That God. You shall have no other gods before me. Verse number 4. I highlighted these, by the way. You shall not make for yourself a carved image or any likeness of anything that is in heaven above or that is in the earth beneath or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them or serve them, for I, the Lord, your God, am a jealous God. Pause, reverential break, right here. Have you ever been loved by a love that was so strong for you that it was scary? I don't know if I wish that on you or not. But honestly, I think that Judy's love for me is much stronger than my love for her. I'm still too selfish, but Hers isn't a scary love. You know, let me tell you something. The creator of the universe loves the creation with a scary love. So when he says, I'm jealous, this is not like your first, second girlfriend. This is a jealousy because this God delivered them from Egypt and from slavery and from a house full of gods. And those gods were very, very ugly and very demented. And they destroyed people. They hurt people. They ruined people. We don't have the time to go into it, but if you look at the pagan practices of the ancient Near Eastern Egyptians, just them right now, we're not even talking about the people in Canaan, their gods were very cruel. And so this God is saying, look, I love you with a everlasting love. I love you with a paternal love. I love you with a creator heart. I love you with a redeemer's heart, with a savior's heart. I love you because I just brought you out of bondage. So when I say don't make another God out of anything, it's because I'm jealous for your love. Brothers and sisters, I believe that Jesus deserves a church that likewise has a passion for for Jesus that borders on jealousy. The kind of passion for Jesus that creates a hunger and a desire to honor him and to please him and to love him as he's loved us. I don't know if you notice this, but in the New Testament, Jesus is fond of saying, just as. All right, is there anyone back there? Could we get those announcements off? We need them to stop. Okay, all right, here we go. Need those guys to stop and these to start. I don't have control over it for some reason. Okay, if you can get control of that, I'd appreciate it. And then just put the first slide up and then I should be good from there. So this jealous God says, don't make carved images for yourself. Now, verse number 7, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. Remember the Sabbath day. That doesn't mean like, do you remember the Sabbath? No, it means honor the Sabbath day. Remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work. But the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, you or your son or your daughters or your male servants or your female servants or your livestock or the sojourner, a stranger, who is within your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea, and all that is in them, and rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Which is God's way of saying, I created the universe in 6 days. You can get your work done in 6 days. Keep one for me. Now here's where people want to start tearing the Ten Commandments apart, because we're in a new covenant, so do we have to keep the Sabbath or not? Or do we keep the Sabbath, or do we keep Sunday? You know, the Saturday or Sunday. And I say, pick one, you know. Take a day and honor God, you know. We'll get back to that in just a moment. But he's saying, you can get your stuff done. And we all burn our candles at both ends, and we all have good reasons why. And even Jesus pointed out, there are good reasons to do something that would be considered work on a let's say a Sunday, you know. There's reasons for that, especially like if you have a job that demands it, you know. But the point is this, that shouldn't be our custom. Our custom should be to take a day for God. Take a day to seek him, especially for those of us who are so busy that we can't really get the devotional time going like we should. See, one day a week is supposed to be for that, to get you caught up and ready for another week. Amen? So we removed the hymnals a long time ago because people were throwing them at me, and I don't like that. So you had to find something of your own to throw at me right now, you know, but hold on. It'll be okay. And then verse number 12, honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God has given you. And you shall not murder, and you shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not bear false witness. We usually interpret that as lying, but it's more. It's that and more. Exodus 20, verse 17, you shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife or his male servant or his female servant or his ox or his donkey or anything that is your neighbor's. So my purpose today is to show you that this is not as ridiculous as you might think. Or in other words, there's really prudent reason to understand the Ten Commandments as the beginning point. So these 10 words, they form like the alphabet for honoring God. If you want to learn how to do trigonometry, you're going to have to start with your addition, subtraction, the basic principles of math. You don't teach children trigonometry first. In fact, if you're kind, you don't teach it to anyone. But you don't start in the advanced stuff. You start here. Same thing with reading and writing. We start by shapes and letters, and we start by what we call the alphabet, ABCs. So there's a very real sense in which the Ten Commandments, which makes up the core of the Law of Moses. And let me just say at this point, the Law of Moses, the one that he received in the presence of God, was written in stone, literally, you know. And yes, the first pair, when Moses came down from the mountain, he saw the people of God breaking the Ten Commandments, and he lost his cool, and he broke those Ten Commandments, or those clay tablets. And then at a future point, God says, now this time you get your own writing paper and bring it to the mountain, and I'll put them on here again. That's the core. There's 613 other commandments. There's a Sabbath worship, and there's the entry point, which is the circumcision of males at 8 days of life. So those things, you know, kept the people of God, the children of Israel, the Jewish people, kept them no matter where they were at, no matter whether they were in Canaan or they're in the wilderness or they were carried away into Babylon and Assyria and other places. Those things identified them as a people. So I'm just going to stop here and put a pin in it and say that when now Jesus died on the cross, fulfilling the sacrificial requirements to set men free, he then begins to say, this is a new covenant I'm making with the house of Israel. What he didn't say is that this gospel was going to jump from the Jewish people into Gentiles, or those who had no circumcision, no following the laws of God, no reverence for the one true God, nothing of that. And all of a sudden, they are getting saved. So then there becomes a great big controversy. Now do they have to become Jewish Christians? And of course, that decision was made a long time ago. So no, Gentile believers do not have to keep the law in its wholeness. But I think that the heart of this, the Ten Commandments, is a good starting point for understanding how to honor God. So let's just look at these. I've rewritten them a little bit for you. I've just used my devotional thoughts as I went through this. So honor God is the one true God by not honoring any other god. You know, Syrian, Egyptian, Babylonian, you name it. This is where the Judeo-Christian value system runs into trouble, because people start feeling that we're being exclusionary and we are eliminating other gods as possibilities. And I'm not going to make any bones about it. You know, the phrase that has been used that I think is a good one is the one true God. So, you know, it's not really considered to be bigotry or even hateful if it's true. You know, if I just say I'm not a very tall man, I am a very old one. You know, that's not, you know, slamming elderly people or short people. It's not promoting tall people or young people. It's just a fact that I'm growing impatient with, but it is nonetheless a fact. So when he says, honor God as the one true God, he's just going back to that jealousy thing. Other gods are going to hurt you. And then the next thing is to worship the one true God by not worshiping the other gods. Well, that's not enough. I mean, you don't worship the other gods, but then you don't, you then present yourself to worship the one true God. So honor God as the one true God by not creating any other gods. For the one true God is a jealous lover. Unless you think that in our sophisticated culture that we do not have other gods, I'm just going to use the language of the day and say, did anyone ever hear of American Idol? Well, that's not what we mean. Of course not. Or is it? Do we ever do homage to those that we idolize? Do we ever lay money at their feet? Do we ever make millionaires out of human beings because of their celebrity status? Let's go on. Honor the one true God by not taking his name lightly. And I'm going to just say that what we often do is that, you know, like I love having my grandchildren over because they're always correcting my language. You know, they're like, Papa, you got bad language, you know. And I love it that, you know, a word like gosh or, you know, can get, you know, you can be voted off the island for that. But anyways, that's just good parenting right there, you know, on at least on the grandparents' part. I'm not sure about what my mom did with me. No, she tried her best. She tried her best. I was just incorrigible. But the thing is that it's way, way, way deeper. It's way deeper than just saying, don't take God's name flippantly. It's more like today I think we hyphenate our names. You know, like conservative Christian. You know, I'm liberal Christian. I mean, we hyphenate. I'm just thinking that there's really Christians. Yeah. Just followers of Jesus. So there's a place for that, you know. And then honor the one true God by honoring his special day. I said last week, I'll just say it real quick in passing. You know, the Jewish believers followed Jesus, and as they followed Jesus, then they started worshiping at the synagogues and at the temple. And, of course, that all happened on Saturday, on the Sabbath, right? They did that until they couldn't, until they weren't allowed to do it any longer. As they were being pushed out and persecuted, then they weren't allowed to do those things. As Gentile believers started accepting Christ, then there was this persecution that was going on. And what they ended up doing was they ended up saying, okay, if we can't worship on Saturday when the rest of the Jews are, then how about if we worship on the Lord's Day, the day that he rose from the dead? And we can talk about which one is better, which one is right, which one is wrong. And I don't think that that necessarily brings more honor to God. I think picking a day and honoring God with that day. And then the early church, actually, they just mixed it up. They just met together every day. At a certain point, they're meeting together every day, you know, because they needed each other. And we're supposed to do that more and more as we see the day coming, as we see the end time, as we see and things winding down, as we see the stage being set for the Lord's return. he said, you actually probably need to meet more often than just a day a week. But that's you know, we can have a conversation about that. Before we continue, I'd like to share two opinions about the next commandments. So I think that the commandments are very specific in the order, and this had something to do with why the Jews would ask Jesus, which is the greatest commandment. Because in Jewishness, and in their thinking, the Ten Commandments or the Ten Words actually were in a specific order. In other words, the most important commandment was the first one, and then moving towards the least. So the most important commandment would be to honor God as the one true God. And the least important one would be about coveting, okay? So it's a countdown, not a count up. And they read from, you know, right to left, so it wouldn't surprise me if this isn't the order. So the 10 words are listed in a very specific order, and that's my opinion. I can't prove that from Scripture or any other way. Second thing is that these 10 words relate directly, that there are four of these 10 that relate directly to God, and then there's the one that relates indirectly to God. So in other words, that there's five commandments for God and then five for mankind or our neighbor. That's an opinion I hold, and I'll show you why right here, right now. Okay, so the next one up, so like we've gone through four commandments relating directly to God. Now here's the fifth commandment, and the fifth commandment, which by the way, the Ten Commandments, I think there was five on one side and five on the other side, five related to God and then five related to man. But here we go. The fifth one is that you honor the one true God by honoring your parents. You say, how could that actually fit, you know, in God's column? Well, we need to see the world the way God sees the world. And life is actually very, very precious to God, all human life, you know. It doesn't matter what tribe, nation, tongue, all human lives, very, very important. So what does God do? God actually uses your mother and your father. And trust me, you had both at some point, you know. God uses them to co-create life with him. When Eve was pregnant with Cain, her firstborn, she said, I have acquired a man with the help of the Lord. If I was Adam, I would have said, I help too, you know. But that's not the way she saw it. She said, I have acquired a man with the help of the Lord. I have actually brought into the world another man with God's help. I'd like to say it this way. God created another man through a woman. You know, I'm just thinking. So your father and your mother are a part of God's creative purpose, okay? Here's where I have to stop and say, What if you struggle with your mom and your dad all your life? I'm just going to tell you, this is going to work out again and again when it comes to any kind of authority structure that God sets in the world, is that you look at the person's position, not their behavior. It is the position of mother and father that is to be honored, not necessarily their behavior. And I trust that you had great parents, you know. I certainly did. You know, at least I have to say that right now because she's sitting over here. But no, it's true. I've had great parents. The point is this. If we haven't had great parents, we're going to have experiences in life that most people don't have, right? Judy and I hear it all the time. I've been keeping mental note. When I'm doing counseling, it is rare for me to hear someone start out by saying, "Pastor, I just want you to know I had great parents." That's not usually how counseling starts out. Sometimes. But I think it would be, over the years, accurate to say that that's not the way counseling usually starts. Okay? If you had great parents, if you had parents who were not so great, in one sense, it makes no difference in that God used them. No matter what convoluted way you got here, God brought you into this world with parents. And so we honor their position, and I hope that we can honor the behavior. Not always. That's going to show up again and again, is honoring the position, not necessarily the behavior. I'm just going to put a pin in right now and just say, as American people, our behavior during this political season that we just came through has been appalling. Absolutely appalling. And it doesn't matter what party, what candidate, it's dishonor and disrespect for authority is rampant. We start with our parents. We start with human life. You know, it's interesting to me that the next thing is no murdering, right? Right out of honoring your parents, the next thing is, and I think this is now moving into the category of our neighbor, how we treat our neighbor. Honor human life. And all its many different shades, ethnicities, backgrounds, countries, honor them because they're human beings made in the image of God. As a matter of fact, God says, I want you to understand this, that it is so important that we honor humankind. That I'm just going to start here with, when you relate to your neighbor, you have to start at this very most basic point of recognizing that they have a right to exist and to be alive, and they're made in the image of God. And every human being has an assignment that God has given them. The problem is that, again, we can't often see the assignment because of the behavior. We see the behavior and we get stopped right there. I'm going to ask you to go on a little journey with me where we just step back and say, when I run into bad behavior, the first thing I want to think of is, he's made in the image of God. He's made in the image of God. She's made in the image of God. God has an assignment. God has a purpose for them and a plan for their life, just like he does for you and for me. So starting there, I do need to point out, because a lot of times people will say, but, you know, what about soldiers and what about policemen, you know? What a soldier does, what a policeman does in the line of duty, if they're good soldiers and they're good policemen, and I know there are bad and there are good, a good soldier operating under authority and instruction is not murdering people. And there's a difference. And a policeman who's a good policeman is not murdering people if he kills someone in the line of duty. What is he doing? What are they doing? They're protecting people. So my soldiers, when I get to see them and talk to them before they go off, I tell them that and according to Romans chapter 13, that they are ministers as much as I am. They are minister under the hand of God to restrain evil, and God uses them for his glory and for his honor. And then I give them a warning. But the soldier, the policeman, needs to be good soldiers, good policemen, not bad ones. And then we're supposed to honor them because they protect us. Hello? This is just the beginning. In other words, here's the point. I honor God, the one true God, by honoring human life. I honor the one true God by considering human life sacred in the image of God. I honor the one true God by honoring my parents. I honor the one true God by sexual purity. And it talks about adultery. See, adultery is not even a sin anymore because there's all these other sins out there. It's like socially acceptable adultery now, you know? At least it's with the right people. Yep. Now, by the way, Leviticus goes into great detail. Do not let your teenagers read Leviticus. You know, it goes into great detail about sexual impurity of all kinds. I mean, it just, you know, you know, a man cannot marry his aunt, whatever. You know, I mean, you'd be surprised what it talks about. Here's the thing, though, is that God mentions adultery, I think, for two reasons. One is idolatry feels like adultery to God. God hates idolatry, therefore adultery. By the way, there's forgiveness. Amen? Right? This is the beautiful thing about the gospel, is we can be forgiven. You know, the thing is, though, that then number two is it doesn't stop with adultery. That represents all of the sexual impurity, all of them under that one category. So we honor the one true God by living honorably with our human body. As a matter of fact, the Apostle Paul would say that this particular sin we do with our body, and it has severe consequences. And over and over and over again, I have seen what happens when we do not maintain sexual purity. Isn't that one of the hardest ones to obey? Isn't that one of the hardest ones? Like, I don't struggle with murdering people most days. I mean, you know, some days I do. But, you know, I don't. But this one's really very personal and really something that we can all understand. This is the thing, is that this is the standard for honoring God. So then what do we do? Well, in this wonderful new covenant that we're in, we get to say, God, would you give us the grace, give us the strength to maintain sexual purity? I'm here. Listen, folks, it's not the people in the pews that concern me right now. It's the Christian leaders that are failing left and right, that it just cuts so deeply. Can I just tell you, I have spent so much time trying to help people to recognize how good God is and why we need the church and why we should be involved in a local community. And then when that happens, it's just like one more reason to not plug in, right? Could you stand up with me? It's so devastating. It's so devastating. Before you guys online leave here in just 1 minute, I just want to say this, that it is true that you cannot accept Christ by keeping the Ten Commandments. But it's also true that you cannot say that you love the Lord your God and you want to walk in a manner pleasing and honorable and worshipful before God by disregarding the very basic tenets of the Ten Commandments. And so I just think that this country is in a rebuilding time. And I'm not thinking politically right now. I'm just thinking we're in a time of rebuilding. And you can't forget the basics. We must return to the basics.